As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, MFC, refereeing, and the Nevada State Athletic Commission. On the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network, special guests today include Patrick the Predator Cote, who takes on the Wonder Boy Stephen Thompson this Saturday at UFC 178. You can check out Patrick's fight on Sportsnet 360 during the UFC 178 prelims. We will also be joined by Big John McCarthy, the man who set the standard and basically created refereeing in mixed martial arts, at least modern day refereeing in mixed martial arts, as well as judging. We will also hear from the CEO and owner of the Maximum Fighting Championships, Mark Pavlich, who has a big event next Friday, October 3rd in Edmonton, Alberta. And we'll also talk to Yahoo.com's Kevin Aioli about the latest, what took place this week with the Nevada State Athletic Commission disciplinary hearings in terms of John Jones, Daniel Cormier, Floyd Mayweather was there, and of course, the lifetime ban on Wanderlei Silva. We'll get to more a little bit later on with Kevin Aioli. But right now we are joined by Patrick Cote, who's been waiting patiently on the line. Patrick, what's going on, my man?
I'm pretty good, Joe. Thanks.
Well, let's be honest. Come on. You're cutting weight. I know you're not doing that good.
You know what? I do that for the last 13 years. And, next month is going to be my 10th anniversary of the UFC. I fought my first fight 2004. So I'm used to do that. You know, it's not the fun part. But, with all the knowledge we have, it's cutting weight to science, so it's better than before.
You know what, Patrick? It's funny that you mentioned that, because as I was prepping for this interview, and sometimes when I prep for guys like yourself, I mean, I've known you since day one. We go back to the Yan Pellerin fight, and I remember thinking that day, and there was Stefan Patry next to me, and I said, this guy shouldn't be fighting at this weight class. He should be fighting at middleweight. Now you're a welterweight. You're talking about 10 years ago, when you fought Tito Ortiz. I mean, do you ever look back and think to yourself, my goodness, where did the time go?
Yes. Now, yes, when you're young, you are in the 20s, you don't think about it. But now I'm 34 years old. I don't feel like 34 years old, but I'm still at this age. And now you realize that, wow, man, I fought like my first fight 10 years ago, almost 120 UFCs ago. So yeah, now I can see that. But I'm very happy about the career I had. And I still have a couple really good fights in me. And, it's going to be another good one Saturday.
Well, you're speaking of a good fight coming up on Saturday. I mean, there's a picture you posted on Twitter, your very last sparring session, and you don't look like a guy in his 30s. You do look like a guy in your 20s. But you're taking a youngster in Stephen Thompson. People don't know. He's been around the game in terms of karate for a very long time. He's sparring out there. At the same time, he's doing okay in the UFC, but the one tweet that you mentioned, you're a 3-1 underdog. This is a fight that's going to air on Sportsnet 360, TVI in your region of the country. A lot of eyeballs will be on this fight, and you're excited you're a 3-1 underdog.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's giving me a little bit more motivation. It doesn't bother me at all. It's not about that. I'm not angry that I'm 3-1. That's okay. He has only one loss, and that was against a very tough guy that's not down. But, at the same time, I don't want to say anything against Matt Brown, but, I think, skills-wise, he's not on the top of the food chain. I think he's really, really tough, and he's always coming back. And, I think, I have a better jiu-jitsu than him. I have a better wrestling, and, I have a better, more power than Matt Brown. So I think it's going to make the difference for this fight against Thompson. I know Thompson is legit on his feet. He's doing a lot of flashy moves, but at the end of the day, I'm going to take the pace of this fight, and he's going to have to back it up.
We're in conversation with the Predator right now, Patrick Cote. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Patrick Cote. It is Patrick_Cote. Now, Stephen Thompson did spend a variety of time in Montreal, generally at TriStar. Did you ever run into him at other gyms other than when he was in town?
That was a long time ago. That was like 2008, 2009, and we did a couple of rounds sparring at this time. So we know each other pretty well. We respect each other pretty well, and for sure, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a fantastic fight out there.
Well, when I first heard of the bout, Patrick, I thought to myself, well, here you have the UFC pitting two gentlemen, two very nice guys against each other. And when you think about a guy like Stephen Thompson, he never has anything bad to say about anybody. You rarely do unless you're agitated or provoked. So what is the mindset sometimes when you have to fight a guy who's not just sitting there trash-talking you and motivating you to want to shut him up? Where do you get the motivation to try and fight this guy and prove, look, I got a job to do here. I got to get a welterweight title shot eventually.
Yeah, but you know what? If I don't punch him, he's going to punch me. I better do anything first. And the thing is, it's not about aiding your opponent. It's not about that. You know, the thing is, we are professional athletes, and it's a professional sport now. It's all about, you know, performing. It's all about winning the fight with the skills we have. You know, my goal it's to win the fight. It's not to hurt him for a long time. And you know, that's what people who don't like this sport have to understand and realize that it's not about we're going there and we just want to punch each other. It's not like that. And you know, I respect Stephen Thompson because you know he's doing the kind of the same training that I did, and I know I trained very hard, and he probably did the same thing on his side. But at the end of the day, we're gonna be in the same cage Saturday, and you know, it's going to be only one winner, and you know, I'm 100% sure it's going to be me.
Well, when I look at this fight, and I want to go back to when Lyoto Machida fought Mauricio Shogun Hua, and Lyoto Machida was the champion, and everybody was talking about the Machida era, and I remember being online or on television always saying, well, listen, in my opinion, styles make fights, and Muay Thai is the difference that can defeat a guy that's a really good karate fighter. And you look at a guy like Stephen Thompson, who's more than karate, let's be honest, he's more than karate, but it's a base that he has. And I thought of Kru Ash, your Muay Thai trainer. I wonder what his thoughts were when the opportunity was presented to him to train a fighter for a guy that's got a karate base. What did he say?
Yeah, it's very different, you know, because everything can switch in 1 second during the fight. It's like when I fought Kai Nog, and our strategy at the beginning was to go inside and box him. And, you know, I wasn't able to find my distance. I wasn't able to get in close because he was a really good front kick. So I had to switch my strategy very, very, very fast in the middle of the first round and decide to wrestle him. So, you know, for sure we have a game plan at the beginning, but there's a lot can happen, you know, very, very fast in the fight. You know me, you know my style. I like to stand my feet and bang. But, you know, I think, you know, before I was more like a brawler, and just going there and just to draw my opponent. But I think, you know, for the last couple of years, I upgrade my game everywhere, you know, not just jiu-jitsu wrestling, but even on my feet. And, you know, I'm going there very confident that, you know, I have more power, I have a better wrestling, a better ground game than Thompson. So, you know, I have to push the pace, and we put a lot of focus on my conditioning on this fight because we want to be able to push the pace for the 50 minutes nonstop.
I know the focus is always to have your hand raised by the referee at the end of the fight. You want to make sure you come out with a win. But when you look up and down this card, and as an analyst, because you are a television analyst for TVR, as well as for the UFC broadcasts on pay-per-view, when you take a look at a card like this that features the return of Dominic Cruz, Kat Zingano, Tim Kennedy versus Romero, you got McGregor and Poirier, you got Donald Cerrone against Eddie Alvarez, who's making his octagon debut, you got one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in Demetrius Johnson headlining this card, and I wonder about a guy like you that thinks to himself, man, I always try and knock somebody out. I want to make a statement, but man, it's going to be a hard on Saturday night with these people on the card. Do you ever think to yourself, you know what, I'm just going to go in there and win? Or is it challenging to say, you know what, I got to figure out a way to be the guy that's remembered on Sunday morning?
Not anymore. I was thinking like that before, but you know, this is going to be my 30th fight, my 16th fight in the UFC now. I don't think I need to prove anything to anybody that who I am. I'm going there now, and the win's the most important thing. And you know what? I'm pretty happy to fight in the other card because after that, I'm going to be able to sit and watch this awesome card and relax. So So, for me, the most important thing to go there and win the fight.
So you're not going to do some extra work when you're done with the fight and step into the booth and do some commentating?
No, we're not. Actually, they're not here live on TVA. So they're still in Montreal. They're going to do that in the studio over there. So, like I said, I'm going to be able to relax and enjoy watching fight.
Well, listen, I want to wish you the best of luck. I also know you bought a new coffee machine in Vegas. Enjoy it, because as you know, that I'm a coffee junkie as well. So enjoy that coffee machine, my friend.
I will, don't worry.
There you have it, Patrick Cote. All right, let's move forward from a fighter, an athlete in the octagon, to a man that is finally returning to Las Vegas. Big John McCarthy has been licensed by the Nevada State Athletic Commission after being basically sort of on a banned list for quite some time. Big John joins us right now. Big John, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Joe. How are you doing, brother?
Well, I'm doing good because, you know, A, bad because I'm not heading down to Las Vegas to cover this event, which is a heartbreaker because I was planning on going, but B, you're back. You're back. You're licensed in the state of Nevada, which absolutely puts a massive smile on my face having known you for so long and following you for so long. You got to be excited about that.
I am. I'm really happy to be able to work in Nevada, and I just hope to go there and do a good job.
What people don't know, though, is you still had to go through the process. There is a process. Big John McCarthy did have to apply for a license.
Yeah, but I think that's the appropriate thing for anybody. I think, you know, there should be no, oh, you're special. No one's special. You know, if you want to do something, if you want to try to work somewhere, then, you know, you can apply for a license there. That commission can decide whether they need you to work there, or if they wanted you to work there, and then it goes from there. But no one is so special that you shouldn't have to apply for license. I'm going to Arizona for the first time today, you know, and I'm working in the state of Arizona tomorrow, and I have to you know, pay for my license. I have to get all the stuff that they want for it, and, you know, that's just the way it is, and there's no reason it should change for anybody.
Now, in terms of, you know, once again, working in Vegas, and I know when you're in the octagon, it is business as usual. You have to focus on the safety of the fighters and make sure none of the rules are being broken. But will there be anything inside you that says, I'm back? Wow, this is cool.
I hope not. I hope not. I mean it when I say that. I mean it. People ask me all the time, you know, what's it like? Are you nervous? And this and that. And, you know, I tell them, I'm never nervous. I get excited, you know. I've learned to, you know, control things, and I have my little rituals that I kind of go through in my head. But you know, everything is about the fighters and the fight itself, and I need to do what is right for the fighters at that time, for their safety. I need to do what's right for the sport of MMA, and that's what I always try to accomplish.
Are you more inclined to work a main event like Demetrius Johnson and Chris Cariasu, who are super fast, or would you rather work some guys that are more your size in the heavyweight or light heavyweight division?
You know what? I'm being honest. You get guys like Demetrius. He is a pain in the butt for any referee because he is so fast. And, you know, Herb is doing that fight Saturday, and he's got his handful with Demetrius as far as sometimes you actually have to change what we do and what mechanically we want to do as a referee because of what Demetrius does and how he does it and how fast he is doing it. There are certain guys out there, you know, Dominic Cruz, you got to kind of change what you do because he changes his footwork and he's in and out and he's doing certain footworks that takes away our angles that we want. So you actually change what you're doing. But I don't care, you know, like it doesn't matter what fight I do, what weight class they are. I like doing any fight. And as long as it's a competitive fight, I don't like doing uncompetitive fights, but as long as it's a good fight, I don't care what weight class they are, I'm just happy to be there.
In conversation right now with Big John McCarthy. You can follow Big John online at John McCarthy MMA. You can also check out his Facebook, official Big John McCarthy. Check his website out, bjmuta.com. So much that he does for the world of mixed martial arts, inside and outside of the octagon, obviously. Jaron Vallel, a gentleman you know very, very well, a mutual friend of ours, is finally getting a fair amount of appreciation and love from the mixed martial arts media and the community with some of the work he's been doing lately in the octagon.
He's doing the job that he is meant to do. And Jaron is a fantastic guy. And this is where, you know, people sit there and say, oh, do you get excited for this? I get excited for guys that, you know, more than myself, I love when a guy that I've worked with a lot and that I've, you know, tried to help and has really worked his butt off to get, you know, to do things the right way, to see them get to the big show that they want to get to, and to actually be doing the main events of those shows at times, and traveling around and just doing a good job. That puts a huge smile on my face, and I feel great about it. It makes me feel better than anything I do anymore, because it's kind of like, you know, they're the new breed, and they're the ones that are coming in and up, and I'm the guy that's kind of going down and out. And that's okay, and you got to understand those things, but I'm so proud of Jaren and what he's done, and other guys, you know, that are doing fantastic around us. Jaren just worked Tokyo. The guy working with him, Steve Percival, is another guy that I've worked with and from Australia. He's a great guy. Todd Anderson from Ontario there, he's just doing fantastic, you know, doing a great job representing the sport well, representing, you know, what I've tried to teach him and what, you know, we do out of command. He's done a great job, and it's funny how the pressure of some of these, you know, things happen with guys. There are guys coming to me, you know, and I just recently had, you know, Frank Trigg and Mac Danzig, two ex-fighters who took my course and stuff, and it's hysterical to me the pressure that they put on themselves to pass, to try to pass the course and stuff based upon you, Joe, because you came and you took it and you passed it. They're all saying, man, I can't play. Dude, Joe Ferraro passes. I can't fluff. I've got to pass this.
Listen, you tell Frank Trigg to keep his mouth shut.
You're the measuring stick, man. he had pressure on him. He was dying. Then he's sweating bullets.
Well, the one thing about Frank is he's the only way he can function is if he puts pressure on himself, especially when he's doing, you know, analysis work with me whenever we're doing the shows. You know, he's always stepping. He's like, Joe, you make me step up my game. And I said, Frank, the only reason why you think like that is because if you are not under pressure, you can't perform. You need that tension. As a professional athlete, you need that. And it's the same thing with Big John when he steps in there. It's a big fight. He's got to get his job done. He can't let the crowd get in his head.
No, you can't, you know, it's so funny how things happen. Yeah, here's an example for you is, you know, I just recently did a fight up in Fort Mac, and it was Dwayne Lewis, who was from Fort Mac, and has, you know, fought, you know, all the way up to the MFC. He was, you know, he's a really good, tough fighter. He fought Tim Hague, who was probably out of his, you know, weight class. He's huge. But, you know, the fight, you know, starts off, and the very first punch that Tim throws hits Dwayne with a right hand, and it breaks his jaw, and it breaks it right in half. I can see it. I can see it split right down the front, and his teeth are going in different directions. And I inside I'm going, oh, man, you're screwed. And, you know, but he's trying to fight, and he's working, and Tim puts him up against the cage. And as he's up against the cage, you know, and they're just, you know, working for position and grappling, and Tim's trying to take him down, and Dwayne's stopping it. And you hear the crowd, you know, just yelling at me, you know, John, break him up, you know, separate him, John, break him up, right? And I'm laughing. Inside my head, I'm thinking, if you could see what I see, and if you knew what I knew, you would say, oh, let him be. You know, because Dwayne's not getting hurt. He's not being hit. He's, you know, none of these things that are occurring, but the fans want to see this. They think this, you know, show that, you know, they want to see, you know, this guy come back. Because they don't think don't even understand that he's hurt. But as a referee inside, you see things, you hear things, you know things that other people don't. And so your whole purpose is to make sure that if the fighter can continue, we'll let him continue if they're showing us they want to be there. But once it comes to a point where, you know, we see something that tells us we need to get the fighter out of there so they can come back and compete again if they want, instead of being damaged to the point where they may never be able to come back. That's what our job is.
Absolutely. Now, in terms of a job that, you know, a lot of us are sort of analyzing and paying very close attention to is the change in the way guys and girls are cutting weight right now. There's the conversation right now that it's still very dangerous, despite the scientific advances that have happened in weight cutting. When you look at weight cutting right now, what do you see the future is going to be for some of these ladies and gentlemen that are competing in mixed martial arts? Because as I think we're getting closer, the model from amateur wrestling may be coming into effect here, where not same day weigh-ins perhaps, but a few changes are probably on the horizon.
Yeah, you're hitting the nail right on the head, Joe. And it's fighters aren't going to like it. And that's because, you know, they want to be in control of deciding where they're going to be at and what weight they're going to be at. And I can make this cut and all that stuff. And promoters themselves, you know, be it a promoter like Dana White with UFC or a promoter that's out of a club show, you know, they're going to sit there and really all they care about, and it's not, and this is not saying anything bad, this is what they should care about, is, hey, that the fighter does make weight.
And that's because the regulations and the commission is going to have that fighter come in and have to make weight. And if they don't make weight, then it puts more pressure back on the promoter of, what are we going to do? Are we going to cancel this fight? Or are we going to continue on and try to do it at a catch weight? What can we do? So, the promoters are looking at it in a fashion of, hey, we just want the fighters to make weight, and we want it to be safe. But as a regulator, we have got to look at what is the best for the fighters, because we have learned a lot over time about what dehydration does as far as traumatic brain injury. And, there's a huge correlation between the dehydrating of the body, because the brain is made of water too. What it does, there's all kinds of things within the brain and the dura that covers the brain, and the stretching of blood vessels based upon the shrinking due to dehydration. And when they try to rehydrate, the cell structure does not come back into the same form that it was unless given time. And that time is usually a 2 to 5 day period, depending upon just how that person's body works. So we don't want to put fighters into fights where they are in a dehydrated state. It's dangerous for them. And so when, the fans are going to look at it and say, oh, man, just let him fight. That's not the answer. And I understand why they're saying it, because I want to see the fight too. But you need to understand, everyone needs to understand, that the regulators of the sport are looking at, we can't put somebody in that we believe is in a depressed state of health where they could possibly be injured, not even so much by their opponent, but just the actual pressure and action in the fight and what they've done to themselves in taking these fluids and these electrolytes out of their body. And so I honestly believe that you're going to see the regulators coming together through probably states like Nevada, California, and coming together and saying, look, we need to start doing a hydrostatic test on a fighter. So when a fighter does, we'll say a medical, they have to do their medicals before, they have to go to a doctor that does a hydrostatic test on them that says you can be no lighter. You cannot weigh in at a weight less than this, based upon the amount of water that it will take out of your body to get past that number. And that's exactly what they're doing in amateur sports with wrestling and things like that. And it's working. I used to cut weight ridiculously, to wrestle, and it was, I'd put plastics on, and it was a lack of knowledge that made me do the things that I did. And there's still a lack of knowledge with a lot of fighters, because they're looking at it saying, I'm okay, because they're a 25, 26, 30-year-old guy, and they don't understand when they're 55 what it has done to their body and what they're going to have to end up having to deal with, based upon what they're doing when they're 25. So we want to make them safe. So if we can get that hydrostatic test and then have a weigh-in, and the weigh-in, we have the weigh-in, and then they have to weigh the same day as the fight after the official weigh-in. They cannot weigh more than a certain amount of weight over what that weigh-in weight was. That's the way to start getting guys. Now, they're not going to like it, but they'll get used to it, and they'll end up getting themselves into the weight classes where they belong, and it will be a healthier, safer fighter going in, and that's what's important.
Well, we're running out of time here. I don't know who's to blame, me for asking the question or for you giving the answer, but there's so much more to discuss about this very topic. I look forward to having you back on UFC Central to discuss this at further. I will definitely talk about this on the TV show and do some articles about it, but thank you very much for your time. All the best to you, Elaine, the family, and hope everything goes well for you in Arizona and Vegas.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. Sorry for being long-winded.
There you have it, Big John McCarthy. Never long-winded for this show here. There's just never enough time to have... I should do a full show with Big John, but we thank him very much for joining us. Let's move forward now to Mark Pavlich, the owner, CEO, president of the Maximum Fighting Championship. Arguably, you can't really argue, to be honest with you, the number one show in Canada when it comes to mixed martial arts, who's been the most long, longest running show in the country, and he continues to put on spectacular events now on Access TV. We are joined right now on the line by Mark Pavlich. Mark, what's going on, my man?
I'm fantastic, Joe.
Listen, big show coming up next week on October 3rd, Shaw Conference Center. MFC 41, talk to me. I'm looking at this card here. I see Shane Campbell, Marcus Edwards in the main event, the return of Victor Valimaki yet again. You got to be excited for this card.
Well, I'm excited for the card, but it was one of those ones that really tested myself. It was the first time ever where I almost, no word of a lie, Joe, almost had to cancel the show due to the fact that there were 7 injuries in 12 days. That's never happened in, you know, 14 years I've been doing this. And really, it was really mind-boggling. It was like, it was crazy. It just kept happening. Like, people are getting injured and injured and injured. And then trying to put a guys together like, you know, Marcus Edwards against Campbell. And it was just crazy. But, you know, in our DNA, everybody knows I can't cancel a show. I've never done it. And it's just, I can't do it. So, you know, we sat down in the dungeon and made it happen.
Where does the law, you know, the line itself, where is it drawn sometimes when you realize, my goodness, we may have to do this?
I don't know, Joe. I've never done it. And never, you know, in 14 years. It's just, you know, I ticket sales are going good. You know, I just feel such an obligation to so many people. I know how corny that sounds after all these years, but I really do. I feel like, oh, I can't let down the fans. I can't let down the sponsors. I can't let down Mark Cuban. You know, listen, first and foremost, can't let down my family, right? That's just the way it is. I look at them and I'm like, nah. I'll figure this out one way or another. You know, I did a lot of begging and pleading, and that's what happened.
Now, I don't want to take any shots at other promoters that have come into the area, but it's pretty obvious you're not just the king of the region, but you're the number one, you know, the biggest show in the country, the longest running, very, very successful. But there's always guys that are trying to crack either A, into your territory, or B, on the Canadian market. How do you deal with all that?
I don't anymore, Joe. I figured it out about 2-3 years ago. You know, I'm not the most intelligent human being in the world, and it actually took me that long to figure it out. But I have a group of friends that I have that are just outstanding people, and they said to me one day at dinner, they said, you realize that you determine what goes on and nobody else. And they follow you. You don't follow them. And I was looking at my friends, and these are humongously successful people. And I was like, no, I didn't realize that. And they're like, well, there's a show a week before mine in my city. And then there's a show a week after mine in the city. And I haven't, no word of Elijah, I've heard nothing about the two other shows. Nothing, like zero. And I thought to myself, I guess they're right. You know, it's what I do. You know, I sell out the MFC. We as a team sell out the MFC. And I don't worry about who's on that show or that show. Those days are over.
In conversation right now with Mark Pavlich. He is the president of the Maximum Fighting Championship. Make sure you follow Maximum Fighting online at Maximum Fighting. And, of course, follow Mark at Mark Pavlich. I did notice a tweet on your timeline. I want to be careful how I word this because it is very complimentary to you and kind of taking a shot at others. But in essence, it was a fan basically saying, look, I know where I'm putting my money moving forward. Mark Pavlich, you have set the bar. I mean, A, it's got to make you feel good. But at the same time, a guy like myself who did come from a promotional background, I look at some of the promoters nowadays, and it doesn't matter if they're big or small, I often shake my head to think to myself, you guys are looking for a cash cow, but it's not there. You got to put the work in.
You know, Joe, I wonder that all the time, and I wonder where some of these shows are getting their money, because I know these shows have came to my city before, and no word of a lie, I know the numbers that they get, because, you know, most of the guys that run any venue in this city, either I've, you know, played tennis with them before, I've had dinner with them before, you know, they've been to my home for big parties, you know, that type of thing. And they tell me the numbers. I'm like, I don't know how these people can do this kind of stuff. You know, that's the question is, where are you getting your money to do these shows? Like, who's giving you this type of money to be able to just to siphon it out the back door? And that's the thing, you know, when they bring that up with me, I do think about it. But then basically 5 minutes after, I don't. I'm on to what I need to do and, you know, sell out shows, make exciting fights. I just kind of keep on track that way.
At this point in your career, having done so many shows, when Fight Night starts next Friday, what are you doing? I mean, I know what you do. I've seen it before, and I know there's a sense of calm, but there's a sense of professionalism as the man who runs the organization. But at this point here, the fight night begins. You're on Access TV. What do? You just sit in cage side and just, you know, Dave's doing his thing, I'm doing my thing, Scott's
doing
his thing?
It's almost comically weird that I'm the one that has the least to do on the day of the show. And that's always been so funny to me. People are like, hey, you have time for lunch? I'm like, I actually do. You know, the day of the show. And they're all laughing, you know, and I'm like, that's you freaking out right now? I'm like, no, I freak out. Like, the last 6 days last week were like, so traumatic for me. And really, I just had to make so many great things happen. And I did make it happen. And when you do that, and when you're in turmoil and things don't go properly, and then I do fix all those things, you do get a sense of like, wait a second, I am kind of good at this business. So, you know, I people do want to fight in the Maximal Fighting Championship. You look at all the last X amount of, like in the last, Joe, no word of a lie, in the last 3 months, six guys have signed with the UFC. And you know, these are guys that have ran their contract out. They've defended their title in the Maximum Fighting Championship numerous times. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know what, I can't keep them any longer because just mathematically it doesn't work out anymore. But I think there's been like five or six guys in the last 3 months that have all signed with the UFC. And that's basically where no one's going to go anywhere else but there from my organization. People don't leave here and go to other shows. They leave here and there's only one place left for them to go.
What do you foresee as the future of mixed martial arts promotion in 2015?
Well, I don't know, Joe. You tell me. You know, the scary part is, UFC canceled their show in Montreal and Toronto, and me, I just get a hard time. I'm like, wow, that freaks me out a little bit because they have the best, you know, brand in the world. And when I see them, they cancel the show in Montreal, Toronto, Los Angeles, I'm like, what's going on here, man? Because that's not them. You know what I mean? They are the 5,000 pound gorilla, and they are guys that don't stop and they work extremely hard. And when I see that happen, I'm like, ugh, that scares me. You know, it's like, you know, no one's immune to this in our industry. Nobody. And when the best show on the planet, that happens, it's like you kind of like go, wait a second, I better be careful here. And I've seen that with a lot of shows in the last, year and a half or so. And I think we're in a very delicate time right now in mixed martial art world. And what we've seen what happened in NFL football, some of that's happening in MMA now. And it's just super scary that we think, that we could be so, I don't know what the word is, but we could be just so flamboyant that we could do these crazy things. And you know, you look now, what happened with DC and what happened with John Jones, and you see, what happened with War Machine recently, and you see, it's just crazy stuff going on, man. And it's with Anthony Johnson. It's like, we have to be very careful in our industry. You know, we have to walk the line and not be so, thinking that we're untouchable.
In conversation right now with Mark Pavlich. He has the Maximum Fighting Championship 41st event going down next Friday, October 3rd, 2014, Shaw Conference Center in Edmonton, Alberta. Let's talk about this for once. Let's go back to the fights from outside the cage or outside the ring in your case to inside. There's a lot of good fights here. The one I'm always, I'm always keeping an eye on, Victor Valimaki. It is what it is. I've liked Victor for a long time. You got Ryan Healy on this card. I do like this main event, but if you could give me one or two fights that people should really be paying close attention to, with the whole card you should be paying attention to, but two, maybe three fights that you think, here's what you can likely expect.
Well, I love the fight with Marcus Edwards and Shane Campbell. That took a lot of convincing because I don't really believe that either one of them really wanted to fight each other. And I think they thought they would kind of bypass each other on their way to wherever. And I just had to make them fight each because I knew what was going to happen in a fight like that. Shane, the level that he's at, striking-wise, and he's just as tough as they come. And Marcus Edwards, the speed at what he fights at, it's great. It's a great fight because Shane's going to have to get out of his comfort zone. He likes to start off kind of that Muay Thai slow style of let's get into this fight, and Marcus Edwards is a complete opposite. And Shane's going to have to like come out of his comfort zone and like probably jog around the block a few times before the actual fight starts. And then, of course, I got such a soft spot for Victor Valimaki. Most people think he's like some over-the-hill veteran. They don't realize that he's in his, early 30s. It's because he started so young that people don't realize that he's not like 40-something years old. Like people think that. And, this Jeremy O'Shine, he's with Thomas Denny, and this kid is like undefeated. He's smashing everybody. And I figured this is it. If Victor wants to, keep rolling in his career, this is the type of young lion I wanted to find that he could fight. And I saw Victor at training the other day, and it was like, whoa. He just does bad things to people. And then, of course, Ryan Healy, the Healy brothers, it doesn't matter what you do, just push play, right? They fight, and, they're the John Waynes of basically mixed martial arts. And he's fighting a kid he's actually originally out of Ontario, Andrew McInnes, who is you know, there's the sky's the limit for him too as well. But this is one of those fights too where he has to, this is the pass go fight. So if he can beat a guy like Ryan Healy in his young career, you know, no telling what he can do.
Absolutely. Listen, there's never enough time. I wish we had more time, but I want to appreciate you spending the time with us this morning. I know you're a busy guy, despite the fact the show was about 10 days away. Thank you very much. I want to wish you the best of luck.
Thanks for having me on, Joe. I really appreciate it.
There you have it, Mark Pavlich. If you are in and around the Edmonton area, I highly suggest getting out to check out a Maximum Fighting Championship event. He puts on, him and his family actually put on a spectacular, spectacular show, to say the least. All right, coming up after the break, Yahoo Sports, Kevin Ioli, to give us his thoughts on what went down with the Nevada State Athletic Commission disciplinary hearing earlier this week. He was there in person, so we'll get a bird's eye view, an eyewitness account of what went down there. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Earlier this week, the Nevada State Athletic Commission did have a hearing to discuss the brawl between John Jones and Daniel Cormier that took place at the MGM Grand. Some other stuff with Floyd Mayweather. They addressed the situation with Wanderlei Silva and much, much more. And Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports was actually there, and he joins us on the line right now. Mr. Ioli, how are you today?
Hey, Joe, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, obviously an interesting day yesterday, or pardon me, on Tuesday, in the Nevada State Athletic Commission hearing. So many stories emanated from there, and we'll kick things off. I mean, there was a big one with Wanderlei Silva, but many eyes were on John Jones and Daniel Cormier from their little altercation in August at the MGM Grand in the lobby. John Jones obviously gets fined. He gets, no suspension per se, but he does have to do 40 hours community service. What is your take overall on how things went down, first things first, with John Jones?
You know, I thought it was fair, Joe. I mean, I don't think they deserved a suspension. Let's start with that off the bat. You know, some people said they should have been suspended. No, I disagree with that. You know, it was bad. The fight was bad. It was one of those things that somebody could have gotten hurt. You know, and somebody did get hurt. Joe Williams, the UFC's director of security, ended up in the hospital after that. He was injured as a result of the melee. And it's one of those things that's very unfortunate. But having said that, it's not something that, in my mind, would rise to the level of a suspension. So now, you know, what is an appropriate punishment? Well, I think, you know, they fined both guys 10% of their purses. John Jones paying the bigger price because not only does he have the bigger purse, so he's paying the bigger, you know, amount, $50,000 fine. But the other thing is John revealed that he lost his Nike endorsement as a result of it, and then he has to do 40 hours of community service. So I think overall a fair thing, because you want to send a message that this stuff can't be tolerated, that the fight could have been in jeopardy, that an innocent bystander could have been in jeopardy. Who knows? You know, Dave Schaller, who was trying to break it up. You know, so many bad things could have happened, and they got lucky. So I think they have to send a message to other fighters, you can't do this. And I think the way you do that is by hitting them pretty heavily in their pocketbooks.
What was the mood like in the room as the deliberations were going on for each guy? Because, I mean, sitting at home watching it via Fight Pass, I was getting a different sense and wondering, you know, what it's actually like to be in that room and listening to John Jones, listening to Daniel Cormier.
Well, you know, I thought they came off very, very differently at the hearing. You know, at the end of the day, they both took ownership of the problem. And said that they were at fault and they were embarrassed by it. You know, John came and sat in the, as he was waiting. Floyd Mayweather had a hearing in front of the commission before either of those two did. And so Floyd was first up, and John sat in the row right in front of me. I think he was in row one of the media or the fan section, and I was in row two. And, you know, he was friendly and said hello and whatnot. And when he got up, you know, he was, I thought he came across very honestly. You know, I thought John, you know, apologized for his role in it. And some people, you know, like to say John's phony and he's this and he's that. And he well may be. But I thought in that instance that he came across sincere and honest you know, he took part, accepted his responsibility, which I think he needed to do. You know, Daniel, I thought it took a little bit of time. You know, I was surprised. You know, Daniel was brutally honest, which he normally is. And Daniel said, hey, you know what? Not only did I do this with John Jones, I pushed an Iranian wrestler in a world competition. I pushed another wrestler at another international competition. When somebody gets in my face, this is how I react. And that, I don't think, is what the commission wanted to hear. You know, they wanted him to say, I've learned from this, and I'm not going to do it again. And, you know, Cormier kind of at first said, yeah, you know, I'm not sure. You know, somebody gets in my face, I have to protect myself. Even, I have to tell you, this wasn't on the record, but even after the hearing was over, Joe, I interviewed Cormier in the hall and asked his reaction to the penalty and everything. And I asked him, I said, one of the things that wasn't brought up was the fact that you threw a shoe when it was all over, and that would indicate that you can't really regain control of your emotions. So how are you going to answer that question? How are you going to deal with a similarly emotional situation as you're building up to this fight? And he said, you know, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done it, but I have to learn to take a step back. So with Daniel, while Daniel is really a good guy and everybody likes him, the one thing about Daniel I thought was, you know, there's still a little bit of a question. Will he do this again? I think John Jones got the point. You know, that $50,000 really hurt him, and he's not happy about losing that 50 grand. You know, Cormier will find 9 grand, 10% of his $90,000 purse. But Cormier, I wonder, you know, I'm not so convinced that, you know, that he learned the same lesson that John Jones did. Just my impression.
Listen, Kevin, I think you're absolutely correct. I think there may not be an opportunity for these two guys to get in that type of altercation again, despite the fact they'll be at the weigh-ins, despite the fact there'll be some pre-fight hype leading up to it. I think Dana White and everyone involved with the UFC will do whatever they can to have these guys keep their distance and not allow them that opportunity. Because I think you're right. With what Daniel Cormier stated in front of the commission was quite simple. If a guy, you know, he didn't want to use the word bullying, but if a guy wants to bully me, I'm going to react. I'm going to defend myself. So I do understand what he's trying to say, despite the fact John Jones does tower over him and, in my opinion, was the one that instigated the whole brawl.
Yeah, I think what the guys have to look at is this. Is what Cormier's first statement said, I thought we were going out there to take a picture. And that's ultimately correct. That's what they were doing. So even when John Jones, you know, put his forehead on Daniel's forehead, you know, all this BS about, oh, I couldn't let him have an advantage. Do you really think when the fight starts that that would give either guy an advantage? I just don't buy that. Even though they both said it, I just think that's hogwash. And I don't buy that one bit, Joe. And I think that, you know, you conduct yourself as a professional. You know, he puts your, you know, his head on your forehead. Just stare him down. Continue to stare him down. Because act like you've been there before, act like you've scored a goal before, and you don't have to have the greatest celebration of all time. You know, you've been there before, you're in these situations, you know how to handle it. If he wants to act like an idiot, that's on him. He loses, not you. And so I think that's something that you have to understand. Keep in mind, this is to promote the fight. This is how you make money. Doing the interviews, taking the pictures helps you make money for the fight. Remember that at all times.
On the line right now with Kevin Ioli. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Kevin I. At the very least, what you should know about him is he's a Gorilla Monsoon fan, which is absolutely awesome, but he's also a 2014 Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame inductee. The man is an absolute legend. His columns on Yahoo are absolutely fantastic. I read them all the time, and so should you. Kevin, in terms of Wanderlei Silva, I was expecting perhaps a 24-month ban or some sort of suspension that I know Ross Goodman, his attorney, was going to appeal. What I was not expecting was a $70,000 fine and I guess a lifetime ban. I mean, your take on that?
Yeah, that was, I mean, I think that they sent a very, very strong message that, you know what, do not run from tests. We would rather you take the test and fail than to run from the test. We're not going to accept that precedent. There's no doubt going to be a court battle, and I think Ross Goodman has a very strong case. You know, there have been other cases in Nevada where guys have been in similar situations, and where things have happened where they weren't licensed, you know, brawls at press conferences, and they weren't licensed yet, and the commission was able to discipline them. And I asked the attorney general yesterday, and he said there was never one that a district court overturned. But I think in this case, you know, there is Ross Goodman, I think, has a pretty strong argument that, hey, if the commission, you know, wants this kind of jurisdiction, they have to go to the state legislature and ask for it. So I think, you know, it may get overturned, but I think still what we saw was the commission saying, this is the worst thing you can possibly do, and if any of you other fighters are potentially thinking about this, don't. Because this ban is a very serious ban, and in the United States and in any country that recognizes the rules, which would be Canada, Great Britain, some other countries, you are done. You are out, and you are suspended forever. So your fight career is over. You know, you might be able to go. Now, Vanderlei's got a particular problem. He's not going to go anywhere, even if he wins his appeal, because he supposedly retired from the UFC. And I say supposedly because you hear a lot of guys say this. They froze his contract. So, and there are a lot of dudes that as a result of his retirement. He had. I asked Dana yesterday, and Dana wasn't sure. He said he either had one or two fights left on the contract. But whatever the number of fights left on Vanderlei's contract, on the day he announced his retirement, that froze. Because if he wants to come back, now he owes the UFC those fights. Well, based on his video you saw last week, Joe, you know that Vanderlei doesn't want to fight for the UFC. So basically that renders him unable to fight, even having that situation right there.
This whole Vanderlei Silva thing, Kevin, has got me sort of surprised in one manner. On the other side, I understand because in dealing with Vanderlei over the years, you know, he's cut from a different cloth. He'll do and say things sometimes without realizing what he's doing. And I don't agree with what he's doing in terms of posting that video, despite the fact he does have various grievances with the UFC. But it was a different situation. In your column, you mentioned it was sort of like, hey, pay attention to what I'm doing here. Don't pay attention to what they're doing over here in terms of the commission, the suspension, and all that stuff there. So, you know, it's sort of a distraction, in my opinion. I think there was different ways, and I think if a guy like Ross Goodman could have gotten a hold of Vanderlei before that video went out, I'm pretty sure he would have told him not to send that out there.
Well, I think that video, look, let's be honest here. That video was very professionally produced.
Yes.
English subtitles on there. At the very time he started talking about his fans, you know, there came shots of fans who had sent pictures to him with War Wand on it with the hashtag. So that was not just something that Vanderlei himself popped up and did, you know, somebody with thought. And when actually they sent me the video, it was sent to me on Twitter from Vanderlei's Twitter account via direct message. And the message was written in perfect English. So obviously it wasn't sent by Vanderlei himself, but somebody, an English speaker running his account. So I think that's it. And I sympathize with a lot of Vanderlei's grievances, but, you know, A, he's talking about Henan Barão in the video. That's none of your business. Henan Barão can turn down a fight if he wants to turn down a fight or take one. And look, Vanderlei himself proved you can turn down fights. He didn't want to fight Chael for the longest time. He said he wasn't going to fight him. And that didn't happen. So, you know, some of the grievances that he had, I think, you know, might be legitimate. But other ones I question. And, you know, something, I think there's something more going on there that we're not aware of. Then has really bubbled to the surface at this point.
I think you're absolutely correct. If I remove my broadcasting persona and put on my fan hat for a moment, and we're talking about a guy whose career has been just absolutely electrifying, fantastic. I just don't want him to be remembered and tainted in this manner. I hope it all works out in the end. I hope, you know, cooler heads prevail, but it is mixed martial arts, and we never know what's going to happen. Then there's Floyd Mayweather, who appeared before the commission first in front of everyone. Obviously, you know, a man of my stature, Kevin, I wear my suits and my blazers and, you know, my nice ties, and Floyd Mayweather's showing up there in his nice blue Burberry top and, you know, donned with people wearing sunglasses and stuff like that. Floyd Mayweather is Floyd Mayweather, but this whole thing with the commission, I almost got a sense that it's like, well, you're here, Floyd. We're just going to have a conversation, but we're not going to penalize you.
Well, he was not. As it turned out, I found this out right before the meeting. Because it was an informational hearing and not a disciplinary hearing, they did not have the ability, even if they wanted to penalize him yesterday.
I see.
So, because they would have had to file a disciplinary complaint against him in order to be able to do that, and they just wanted to ask him questions, make him appear to ask him questions. So, to start with, they did, you know, it turns out that they didn't even have the ability yesterday to penalize him. But I thought the commission, Joe, really came off looking bad in that whole scenario. You know, I think some people who read my story where, you know, I wrote about Mayweather where I said this whole thing was fake, the Showtime All Access series. You know, if you they missed one line in my story that was very critical where I said, if Mayweather is to be believed, because come on, who believes it was fake marijuana that they showed on that show? Oh, come on, we're not. You know, I might have been born at night, but it wasn't last night, and I'm not buying. You know, I'm not buying that argument as well as a number of other ones. But the commission was. I was shocked at how compliant they were, and they just totally fell over for Mayweather and like, oh, okay, Floyd, okay, boss, we accept it. And Mayweather just, you know, played the commission, played the media, played the public, got out of there and did what he wanted to do.
Yeah, listen, Floyd Mayweather is an absolute genius when it comes to marketing and a genius when it comes to dealing with so many different media, especially social media. The guy is fantastic. I think he got away with one there. It is what it is. But, you know, I will still watch every Floyd Mayweather fight because I think he's a fantastic fighter. But come Saturday night, UFC 178 is at the MGM Grand. I will not be there, unfortunately, so I will be living through you, Kevin, if you're going to be attending. Demetrius Johnson, one of the best pound-for-pound fighters, underappreciated fighters in the sport, obviously a huge favorite, taking on Chris Karrueche, also a massive underdog. DJ, what does he have to prove here?
You know, the thing DJ has to do is just keep being in good fights and performing at a high level. You know, one of the problems he has is that the public just doesn't have a great interest in the men's 125-pound division. He's beaten all the top fighters. And I think even with those top fighters, the public was not looking at it and saying, you know, hey, boy, these are bad guys. I think, you know, there's people that sit at home, and I do think there's a lot of these people out there. And they look at it, you know, they're maybe a 200-pound guy, and they perceive themselves to be a tough guy. And they look at a guy like Demetrius Johnson at 125. Yeah, I can handle him. Some guy named Mighty Mouse isn't going to. Now, you and I both know that's ridiculous and it's not true. But I think that's the perception of a lot of guys out there. And so as a result, that division hasn't really gotten hot and hasn't really taken off, even though there's been a lot of really good fights in that division. And I think that at the very top, you know, Demetrius is a pound-for-pound fighter. I think John Dodson, you can make a case for him. He's hurt now and not fighting, but I think you can make a case for him that he's one of the 10 best fighters in the world. Tremendous athlete, tremendous fighter, John Dodson. I think Chris Karrueche is in for a big beating on Saturday. And I think Karrueche is going to take a whipping from Demetrius Johnson, who needs to kind of keep putting together a string of wins until the public finally says, you know what, maybe we're wrong about this guy. He's a pretty badass fighter.
Yeah, listen, in my assessment for UFC Central, the television side, when I was breaking down the fight, I had to go back and think to myself what TJ Dillashaw did to Hayden Barrow, but then I said, is Hayden Barrow a better mixed martial artist than Demetrius Johnson? And I came up with the answer, no. I think Demetrius is a better fighter, so I do give him a massive edge versus Chris Karrueche also, although I will not be blinking in this fight after what TJ Dillashaw did in May to Hayden Barrow. We'll see what happens there, but a guy, Eddie Alvarez, Philly's finest, finally making his octagon debut. Unfortunately, his assignment is the cowboy, Donald Cerrone. Good luck with that, Eddie.
Yeah, that I think that is going to be, to me, that's the main event of the show. I mean, that's the fight that everybody wants to see. That's the fight that, you know, I'm driving around in town, Las Vegas today. That's the fight that everybody's buzzing about, that they're talking about. People are really interested in that fight. You know, Eddie Alvarez has been in two of the best fights I've ever seen against Michael Chandler. And then you look at Donald Cerrone, and, you know, he's been in seven of the best fights I've ever seen. You know, these two guys together, I think it's a can't-miss, unbelievable, just hold-your-breath type of fight, because there's going to be a lot of damage on both sides. And I think it's one of those fights that if you are a fight fan, if you don't watch anything else all year, that's the one fight that you cannot miss. It's going to be sensational.
Well, I'm pretty confident you are not around Conor McGregor at the moment, because you mentioned that you think the main event is Alvarez Cowboy. Well, don't tell that to the notorious one, because Conor believes his fight versus Dustin Poirier is the main event, and I think this is obviously a massive test for Conor McGregor, which will prove a lot of things. A, he may not be ready for the elite. B, he is ready for the elite.
You know, know, Joe, I think Conor is a very good fighter. You know, he's Cage Warriors, featherweight, and lightweight champion. You know, he's reeled off 3 wins in 3 fights in the UFC, beat, you know, Max Holloway, especially, who I have great respect for. I think a really good fighter. But I think, you know, Conor's ability to talk and promote himself far exceeds any fighter's ability, let alone his. And, you know, I think that, you know, he's just by nature a little bit overrated because of all the hype that surrounds him. Not saying that I don't think Conor McGregor is the real deal. I think he is an elite fighter. I think we have yet to see if he's an elite fighter at the level of a Jose Aldo, a Chad Mendes, those kind of guys at the very top of the division. This fight with Poirier, I think, is the first fight that he's had that's really going to prove that. You know, we know Poirier is an elite guy, that Poirier can hang and beat the best kind of guys in his division. If Conor McGregor comes in and does to Dustin Poirier what he did to the 3 fighters he's fought already, Marcus Brimage, Max Holloway, and Diego Brandão, then I think you have to say, you know what, he's ready for all comers. He can fight anybody in this division and would have a better than even chance of winning. But I think he needs to prove it in the cage one more time before you're going to have, you know, wide acceptance of his ability.
While my written work can never compare to yours, Kevin, I did pen a piece for Sportsnet.ca entitled, in essence, you know, the ruler is trying to return to his kingdom and take over the territory. Dominic Cruz, the former 135-pound champion for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, makes his return 3 days short of a 3-year hiatus. He'll be taken out to Takeya Mizugaki. That division has changed so much since 2011. Dominic Cruz, Takeya Mizugaki. I don't believe we will see the old vintage Dominic Cruz. We will likely see a version 2.0. At best, we may see 70 to 80% of what Dominic Cruz was in the past. What is your take on his fight?
You know, it's hard to know for sure. You know, my sense is this, that Dominic Cruz is going to be a better fighter than he was before, because I think, you know, he's had the ability to study. He's had the ability to watch other fighters, you know, during his time as an analyst on Fox, you know, see how other fighters prepare. And I think Dominic is one of the most analytical, sharpest minds in MMA. And I think Dominic's the kind of guy that will learn from what he saw from these other guys. The question is only physically, does he have it left? Is he still as quick as he once was? Dominic is a guy that relied on footwork, and obviously he's had, you know, leg injuries that have kept him out for 3 years, as you mentioned before. So, you know, you have to question, is his footwork going to be as good as it was before? Because that's what separated him. I think it will, because of the advances in surgery today. You know, we most often see guys come back. You know, if Bobby Orr had come in the 2000s as opposed to the 1960s, you know, he might have gone on and had a full career, and, you know, we would never be talking about anybody else but Bobby Orr as the greatest player who ever lived. And I think, you know, that Dominic Cruz is fortunate that he has come around at a time where medical science can treat him better than they did guys years ago. Years ago, he would be a shell of himself coming into this, you know, wouldn't have the lateral quickness or the movement, change of direction, the things that make him great. I think he will have that, and I think you're going to see Dominic Cruz fight at a very high level on Saturday night.
All right, 2 quick questions before we let you go. I know your time is limited, and we have to wrap this up here. Question number one, will the Toronto Maple Leafs, I know they won't be, you know, placed higher than your Pittsburgh Penguins, but will the Toronto Maple Leafs at least make the playoffs this year?
Is Randy Carlyle still coaching the team?
Oh, yes, he is.
You got my answer.
Okay, and question number two, a tweet that you put out there, and I will read it word for word. Oops. Just realized it's my 26th wedding anniversary today after Betsy left for work. I have to get to work on a big surprise for tonight. I had the honor of meeting Betsy actually in Dallas watching a hockey game. Do you have anything planned yet?
Well, you know what? That was like 3 hours ago that tweet went out at night. I still haven't gotten forward on that. I was messing with Donald Cerrone. But now that I'm done with the Cowboy, now it's on to Betsy.
Priorities, my friend. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Appreciate it, Joe. Thanks for having me.
There you have it. Kevin Ioli, right from Las Vegas, Nevada, where UFC 178 will take place this weekend at the MGM Grand. I really wish I could be there, but it is what it is. All right. Thank you very much to Kevin Ioli and, of course, Big John McCarthy, Mark Pavlich, and Patrick Cote for joining us this week. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.